Blog Talk Radio.
Cause tomorrow might be good for something. Hold on, feeling like I'm headed for a breakdown, and I don't know. Talking to myself in public and dodging glances on the train. And I know they've all been talking about me. I can hear them whisper, and it makes me think there must be something wrong with me. Out of all the hours thinking, somehow a little unwell, I know. Right now you can't tell, but stay a while and maybe then you'll see a different side of me. I'm not crazy, I'm just a little impaired. I know right now you don't care, but soon enough you're gonna think of me and how I used to be.
That was Unwell by Matchbox 20, released in 2003 on their album More Than You Think You Are. And I'd like to welcome everyone listening to a Team of Voices broadcast of Off the Rack. I'm your host, Raconteur. In case you're wondering, a Team of Voices is the name of our group on the allpoetry.com website, where you'll find the links to the poems that you'll hear on this podcast, and also be able to meet some of the amazing poets who are gracious enough to share their words. Feel free to join us on allpoetry.com. It's free to join. I hope you're ready, because now it's time to rack our brains discussing the things that drive us crazy and touch on how they make us think and feel.
So, perception is reality, huh? Yeah, that certainly drives me insane. Probably a little more than it should, but, you know, the idea that, you know, people can take your words and interpret them however they want and, I guess, view you differently. There's a feeling behind that really bothers me more than anything. I guess that the mask that some people hide behind sometimes, or I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe sometimes. I'm thinking along the lines of when you say something to someone and they see you in a certain way, you can kind of unduly influence them. And it's that influence, I guess, that I'm talking about that they take as reality. And then, you know, later on when they realize, you know, it was more, you know, that they were enamored with what they heard. And, you know, even though it is who you are or whatever, it's not what they really thought it was. And, you know, it changes the way that they act and feel towards you. So, you know, anyway, it's a mess jumble of nonsense. And I know the prompt didn't really say that, you know, but, you know, I'd like you guys to take it in whatever direction you want. So, with that, I'll start letting people in the door, and I say hello to Pretty Bird first. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing well. And I absolutely concur. Life is exactly what we perceive it to be, and it's amazing how oftentimes we miss the mark, even by a little bit, and it changes everything. And so I think it's going to be a great discussion tonight.
Yeah, it's going to go, I think, in 12 different directions at once. I think we got our friend Sweet Pea on the line. How you doing, Sweet?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Happy to hear your voice.
Thank you. And I agree. Perception is reality. My puppies are good. My little puppy is 4 months old, weighs 22 pounds, and he's only going to double in size. So, woohoo, looks like I'm going to have another beast like I'm going to.
So when do you start training them to fly, babe?
He's already he's already chasing rollers, which is what we keep on the ground. We just roll the frisbees. He's already had a frisbee in his mouth quite a few times. He's got the introduction. He's been around dogs playing frisbees. He watches them. He's getting ready to go to puppy boot camp on May 10th, which he'll spend about 3 weeks with a trainer. I won't get to see him, but he'll be in full-on, you know, obedience training. And that's like puppy boot camp. And then we'll continue doing open classes with him. So first and foremost, he goes to complete training for obedience before we even start really hammering him with frisbee training. And then once that starts, we won't even let him compete on the field till he's 2 years old, so that we make sure all his bones and his muscles are developed and all that, because we don't want him to get injured if he's not fully developed with muscles and core skeleton.
Oh, you're such a good mama.
I kind of wonder what the dog's perception is of that flying disc, if he's playing or if he thinks it's work, you know?
He thinks it's work. It's a prey drive. They're not allowed to have their frisbees unless they're working. It's not a toy. We don't keep it around the house. They're always put away until they're on the field. So unless they're working for the frisbee, they're not in their sights.
Wow. So it's
and Remington's
not like
already been on sheep.
I'm sorry, who has?
Remington, the pup, has already. We've had him in the corral with another. With another Aussie working the sheep, so turning sheep and smelling the sheep and out there with sheep, and he did really
like
great.
Like actual real live sheep, like shepherding sheep?
Yes.
That's awesome.
That bad sheep.
That'll
yeah,
do, Pete.
It was really
That'll
cute.
Do.
I'll have to send you the video, Creeper.
Oh, yes.
It was pretty cute.
Oh, Lord.
I know you're in a time crunch, Sweet, so but let's start and jump right in and get you read.
We can't. I still have to finish my last stanza.
Oh.
You can put me up,
well,
though. I can grab that.
No, I got mine queued up.
All right, well, let's see that.
Yeah, because again, the idea that I wrote this from, I started off. This came from Becky's prompt, she wanted something green, and I went with serpents. And it ties into the idea of the perception of a person really well, I think. I wasn't clear in – well, anyway, I'll let it speak for itself whenever you're ready to hit play.
Here we go.
Cold-Blooded by Raconteur. Her eyes were green, revealing the serpent within, constricting my dreams before her ivory fangs ever touched skin. Venomous words administered through innuendo and lies, mesmerizing gyrations complete her disguise. I'm simply not interesting enough to charm this viper, nor can I play the flute, so I'm forced to pay the piper. Intoxicated by the thought of her, as predicted, I seal my fate. Grabbing my cell phone, I ask her out on another date. End poem.
You know, Rack, maybe it's just me, but that second stanza with the gyrations was kind of really sensual. You're like, just, you know, through innuendo, and your voice dropped and got all kinds of sultry. I know it ain't that Sunday, but still, you know, that's where your voice took me. But I kind of was captivated by, you know, constricting my dreams before her ivory fangs even touched skin, because that's a really powerful thing that, you know, sometimes the beauty of some of their physical beauty and their kind of coy way of being, where they kind of don't even act like they notice that they crush you, but yet somehow, you know, they do it on purpose, and they've got that little twinkle in their eye like, ah, but you're still here. And I think we've all known people like that. And there's something really captivating about them. There's something that pulls you towards them. And, you know, sometimes it can be hard to get out of that. It's almost like you're hypnotized to or compelled to be there, even though it's not for your own good. So I absolutely understand that feeling. And what did you get out of it, Sweet?
Anytime you use serpents, I kind of run away and don't want to look at it. But I think that's like the lowest of things that you can do. And so your poem gave me the creeps. No, I think it's kind of really deep in how you look at things and the way you view not just yourself but everything around you. But I really enjoyed it. I think it takes a lot of, for me, you know, based on your subject, I'm trying to find meaning within meaning within meaning. I like the thought process.
The thing that's not really illustrated in this that I should have probably worked in somehow is that thought of how she's being accused of being a viper, and you know, if it's rumor or innuendo and not necessarily my own observation that's making those claims, and that's why I'm calling her back, you know, to kind of give her a chance, find out for myself. But also, like Pretty Bird said, you know, I'm enamored with the whole picture, so, you know, I can kind of ignore that, and you know, it's all a question of perception in my head. And, you know, you look at someone and your friends say, you know, she's going to crush your dreams, she's going to do, you know, she does nothing but lie, and then at the same time you're like, yeah, let me find out for myself. And they just shake their
right.
heads and, you know, we're going to get hurt. And you die with a smile, but, you know, anyway, that was kind of the thought behind it. It was very contradictory in that regard, but you know that was what I was thinking about it. It was like, you know, yeah, she's a snake. You know, you could say anything you want about her, but I'm going for a second date.
Right, just like everybody does, you know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I've got Paula Abdul in the back of my head with the cold-hearted snake. I mean, it's like throwback to way the heck whenever that was, and now I feel really old, so thanks.
I think some people bring out the worst in other people. So you can't always say that, you know, that person is going to be that for you. And
exactly.
When sometimes that, you know, some people bring out the best in each other and some people bring out the worst in each other.
Yeah, yeah. That used to be one of my favorite thoughts was, you know, different people bring out different things in each other. You know? You've got that friend that everyone's like, oh, he's hysterical. And, you know, there's always this one person that's like, I don't think he's funny. You know, because they just rubbed the guy the wrong way or whatever, and they I don't know. It's, again, the perception.
Yeah.
Oh, if,
yeah. All right, I'm in.
We have Marius on the board if you want to put him up.
Does he have an audio, or are you going to have to read him for me?
We need a reader.
Okay.
So,
that's
your call. Which one of the lovely ladies would you like to read?
She's trying to write a verse, so.
Oh, so I guess that leaves me. All right. Yeah.
If you don't mind.
That's good. That's
and
fine.
I'm done, FYI.
Oh, awesome. So, I have him up on the board. And it is called Perception. Let me know when you guys see it.
Got it.
You'll be waiting a long time for
that. This is Perception, in parentheses, it's QAP 8x10 form. So I'm assuming, and that's all explained in the AN, not sure what that is, but I'm excited to read it. And it goes like this. Again, this is Perception by Marius Alexandru. Why am I free locked in my cage? Because you're free of hate and rage. Why am I chained walking on grass? You look at your half-empty glass. I just don't know which one is true. The sky is gray. The sky is blue. I do not know. What do you think? Life could be dark or it could be pink. Am I in prison or outside? We all are going on this ride. And home.
Wow, this is a great interpretation of the prompt. It's very much along the lines of exactly what I was looking for, in the sense of, you know, it's life is what you make it, and you know, is it blue, is it pink? It kind of depends on your mood, and you're in control at the end of the day. You know, you can't. Anyone could try and argue with you and tell you otherwise, but if that's how you see it, it doesn't matter what they. They're really not going to convince you. This also brings up that other lovely phrase that we can, let's disagree. You know, I love that one when someone decides that they're going to convince you that you're wrong no matter what you're thinking, no matter what you're thinking. I mean, this offers the questions and the answers, or I guess potential answers to just, you know, very simple things that you think, you know, aren't able to be interpreted that one or the other, but, you know, it's very much, you know, well, half empty or half full. It depends on the person. And, you know, you did a great job, Marius, saying that in this piece. This is fantastic. Thank you very much for sharing that tonight. Let me get your comment. Sweet Pea, please.
Well, I love this because obviously every answer is right. And I love the ending. We are all going on this ride. Oh, we all do ride the same ride in different forms. Some like the roller coaster, some like the merry-go-round, and some like the little boats that you paddle. But we're all on the same ride. I like, you know, could be dark or it could be pink. Some days it's dark and some days it's pink, and, you know, I like big dogs with pink noses, but I just love how this is all, you know, and the verse that says, why am I chained walking on grass, all I could think of is there's signs, everywhere there's signs. I just like that because, you know, we're chained by the signs, but damn it, I'm going to walk on the grass anyway. I loved how many things that came into my head reading this, Marius, so that was great. Great flow, obviously. Very interesting format. But I love the answers to all his questions. It's great. Great philosophical thoughts throughout.
Yeah. He did a good job with Pretty Bird. What did you think?
You know, me being, you know, all bird-like, but that opening line kind of really caught me. You know, why am I free locked in a cage? And when you turn that around at the end, am I in prison or outside? You know, sometimes we are our own prison. I'm just saying, you know, back to god-awful, hateful, mindful things, like my mind hates me. But I think that where all of this is true, there are everything's the right answer, which means that everything is also the wrong answer. And I kind of really love that concept because, a little insight to the way my brain works. Santa 2, you look at your half-empty glass. Here's the thing about that glass. Are you ready? Okay. I am not crazy. Just need to preface this. If you are pouring something into the glass, then it is half full. If you're pouring it out, it is half empty. However, if you have to pour some out, or if you pour some in and you pour too much and you have to pour some out, it is still half full. And if you pour some out and it's too little, you have to pour some back in, it is still half empty because it's all about the intent of what is in there. So it's never just half full or half empty. It's never just this or that. It's like, well, let me take a look at this, that, and the other thing, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. The sky is gray, but, you know, that's only because we're looking at it from underneath because on top of those clouds is always blue. And so I kind of really love that these lines kind of make you look at this side and that side. So I thought that any poem that can make you think is awesome. So excellent job.
Yeah, it also lends a thought that it's not just, you know, the question, it's when you ask the question.
You know, when you ask, and the inflection you use as well, because, you know, have a nice day can be very nice. It could also be F you. So it's all in the tone, you know? I'm just saying.
That's why I hate texting. There's no inflection.
You know, everybody always reads me as that cold-hearted snake. Like, everybody's always like, why are you yelling at me? I was like, first of all, no cap. Second of all, there's no attitude. There's no, I'm sorry you think I'm so horrible. I love you too.
I get that. I really do. I love you guys. All right, sweet. Let's get you red. Waiting for that last
right now.
Last turn of phrase.
There you go, my sweet. You are up.
Okay. Perception. Do you see what I see? Do butterflies still flutter in stomachs that drip with acid rain? Can smiles meld with gunmetal shine on burnt faces of pain? Antifreeze dissolves teardrops on cherry cherub cheeks, shield against tapping in the shadows of self-retreat. Orbital reflections from a stranger space create fairy tale kindness that crumbles with fate. As the screams within the synapses crackle between the bridges of shame and disgrace. Extinguished fireballs of desire no longer rain. Glaciers float in frozen veins. Ice crystals shred the bone in off-key sounds of a two-pronged saxophone. Voice of an angel speaks in poetic tones. Ears listen to the devil's rhetoric in palindromes. Confusion spins on rusty subway turnstiles, and self-esteem vomits yellow vile. Eyes in the mirror stare back on repeat, believer of hope crushed by defeat. The cruelty of knowing the internal history tells no white lies and rots within the core, leaving no mercy. End quote.
Holy mackerel. Wow. I don't even know where to begin with this. You hit me left, right, and uppercut, and I was out. Holy, this is really unbelievable. I started off with the line that set my head on the damn song. Do you see what I see? But I was able to stick. I was able to stay with you. And, well, again, considering who your father was, too. You know, get out of my head. Get out of my head. Anyway, yeah, and then your cheeks appeared again, which you know always brings me down. And the line that really enamored me was when you're talking about the rusted turnstile. You know that's a beautiful image right there. That's just such a metaphor too. I mean, this is unbelievable. I really enjoyed this suite. Thank you. Pretty bird.
Thank you.
Girl, I knew you were gonna kick my butt as soon as I heard that. Find me when you sent it to me a few days ago. I was like, ooh. So you know, I was eagerly awaiting, and you absolutely did not disappoint. You kind of. This is what my mind looks like on a daily basis recently, just, you know, putting that out there. And they're powerful and the acrid images are wrapped in this pain and solitude and it's so wonderfully and disturbingly familiar. It caught me off guard. But, I mean, what are you going to do with that opening line? Do butterflies still flutter in stomachs that drip with acid rain? And you took this to such a visceral level. And, again, with your super sweet and silky voice, your voice is very silky tonight, by the way, and that it's just almost like a bedtime story, and you find yourself kind of fighting back tears because it's like, I feel so seen. You know, and it's where is it? Okay, the whole antifreeze dissolves teardrops on cherry cherub cheeks, shield against chapping in the shadows of self retreat. Orbital reflections from a stranger's face create fairy tale kindness that crumbles with fate as the screens within the synapses. Yes, I know those screens very well. They keep me up at night, and And sometimes it is the kindness of strangers that offer both comfort and this, you know, for me, it's a bit of disdain, not for them, but for the people that should see things that they're overlooking and are oblivious to. Like, how can a stranger notice some stuff? But you people that are in my face notice nothing. So thanks again, and right back at you. And but
right,
you know,
yeah, so right.
So I feel every word of this suite. So I actually put it on two lists. So there you go.
Thank you.
Yeah. I also love the part where she's talking about the believer of hope. You know, when someone gives you those sweet words, and you know, again, we're talking about the perception and. Why wouldn't you believe them, you know? And you find out that it's not, you know, the devil. Oh, that's just one of the most crushing things. It makes you not want to believe anyone ever again. And that's so sad because that shouldn't be the way that it is. I mean, there's no other way to put that. It's like it just shouldn't be. And that's kind of, for me, the summation of that thought, you know? Believing someone, it should be the default setting, not the defensive skepticism that we've all come to grow into because of the way life has been or has proven itself to be, you know. The loss of innocence is summed up in that. I mean, really, really beautiful, sweet. Really?
The world is Pavlov, and we are all dogs with that intermittent conditioning that makes us crazy. But I kind of really enjoyed this. Do you see what I see? And it's a smile with the sparkle filter of wonderfulness, and the poem is all what's beneath in the pain that is hidden behind a smile. And I just I kind of really I'm just going to say this. When you do darkness, it's usually like super creepy and like bloody and like sacrificial and all kinds of fabulous. And, you know, and
right.
So to do visceral gut-wrenching pain is not your norm. And you knocked it out of the park. And this is my comfort zone. I have poems about ripping out people's eyeballs. So I feel you, girl, but, I absolutely love this. It resonates profoundly.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And let's go to since Laughing Soul's on the board, let's read her next, please.
Absolutely. And Sweet, if you wouldn't mind reading her since I read the last one.
Not a problem.
Awesome.
It's not to me big words. I'm good.
It should be.
Actually,
on the
board. It was hers.
What?
Actually, Sweet read the last one because it was hers.
Uh-huh. The last one that needed a reader.
I got to pick on you for that one.
Just a little bit. So whenever
Sweet,
you're ready, Sweet.
Okay. The Life of a Prostitute. By Laughing Soul. I can never write about a prostitute because I have no idea of the woes she goes through. I've only seen her in the night. Wonder what she looks like in daylight. I've only seen her in the dark, standing in a corner with shadow stark, beckoning every passerby with a whistle. I think she sleeps on a bed of thistles. How can I pour her agony on paper? Her afflictions she masks with hideous makeup. All we know, she sells pleasures. Lo, whoever sees her burning treasures. I tried inking her stains, hope it did some justice to her pains. The Life of a Prostitute. And the
cacophonic.
Cacophonic crowd seeking solitude, Laughing Soul, and poem.
Wow, that's
I knew
interesting.
It wasn't cacophony. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's funny. Yeah, I my mind does that too. Sometimes it hits a speed bump when I hit a word like that. It's like
brain dead.
Yeah, this is an interesting point of view. You know, I guess in certain cultures, I don't know that it's cultures, but, you know, that there's certain situations where prostitution isn't frowned upon. It's legal. It's a legitimate trade business. But you know, this is like, you know, the look at, I guess, what forces them into that life and when it's not really a choice. And the pain that comes with that, I think, is what she's really talking about. And, you know, the perception of them being, I guess, dirty and second class. I mean, that line that she read about, where was it? Something about that there was a negative connotation to it, but she didn't really say it in that way. She was talking about... well, anyway, it just read to me more like disease ridden than what she was talking about. And I'm sure Pretty Bird or, you know, maybe even you, Sweet, we'll see. maybe even you, the only two online. Her affliction, you know, and that's what she's afflicted with. But anyway, I mean, it's very thought provoking. To try and humanize them is, you know, admirable. You know, that they're not all, I guess, denizens of the night, and they do come out in the daytime and do whatever it is that they do. But, you know, there's influences in their life that they have no control over that, you know, make what they do, I guess, feel and seem different. You know, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, the idea of going to a prostitute is a little different for a guy than it is for a woman, I think. And, yeah, there's that sense of shame, that admission of, you know, if you ever, you know, paid for sex and the connotation that comes with it, you know, all that's wrapped up in this for me. This is a great write. Thank you very much for bringing it tonight. Sweet, you read it. What'd you think?
I think that I found this sad. I mean, most women are either forced or sold into this life of secrets and shame, especially in a lot of cultures. I think this is an amazing, you know, dichotomy of what a woman may look like in the night, regardless, you know, of this lifestyle and how she may look in the day. She could be a mother. She could be, you know, a caregiver to her mother. She could be someone completely different. And she does what she has to do, put food on the table. And so her day may be completely different. I also know in some cultures, mistresses and concubines are highly celebrated. They're well kept, and it's a occupation of high status. So, you know, their days and nights are, you know, their days are pampered and they're bathed and they're given perfumes and jewelries, and wives are, you know, they hail them as something special to husbands or, you know, sons or things like that. So, again, it's about perception. You know, what culture are you in, and what are you looking at? How do you look at this woman? I thought that was quite interesting to look at it both ways, and, you know, to see the two sides of any woman. So I really enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you, sweet. Okay, pretty bird, have at it.
Okay. I think that this is like the ultimate in people watching, you know, where you try to put a story, but you just don't have words because you can't fathom the pain. And again, the hideous makeup that hides those afflictions. I don't know if she's getting beat and forced to do it. I don't know if she's an addict and is, you know, that's the only way to keep her in her escape from the pain of her everyday. Whatever the backstory is, we can only but watch her at night in the shadows, doing her best to lure them with the missiles and her tricks of the trade, so to speak. And if it's, there's a lot of pain in this, and the I've tried inking her stains, you know, and there's often shame, and there it seems to be sadness, and especially if you're not there of your own volition. Now, those moms that do what they have to do, it is a choice that they are forced into in order to provide for their children. But if you're getting beat down to be in there, if you are, you know, addicted to things that leave regular work to, you know, as no longer an option, it's a different kind of feeling. It's a different kind of pain. Doesn't matter if you want out, you can't get out, you can't not do it, and you're there with your empty eyes and sometimes broken body and smiling through that messy lipstick, just trying to get through a night and hope you can just make it to the next morning. And this was very soulful, and again, look at the different sides that just the three of us came up with from reading the same words. So perception is kind of everything, and I kind of am fascinated by that.
Yeah, you brought out the thought too of the college girl that, you know, isn't going to be able to go through college on a McDonald's salary, so you know she turns to that as a viable form of income, and you know the shame that comes with it because you know selling her body, you know. Anyway, this is deep and reflective and emotional and very sad. Thank you, Laughing Soul. Next up, let's do, I guess, go in order. We'll go down and hit K next.
One second. Okay. Absolutely. That needs a reader. Okay. So here we go with K. And I guess if we are taking turns, my sweet, I'm reading K.
Thank you.
Yes, you are.
Okay, this is Stoic Chicks Hold Their Own. And the image says Bergian, I guess that's how you pronounce that, because today my brain does not work. And I can't read it because it's tiny. It says begin to grow or increase rapidly. Like burgeoning. Hello, I know how to read. I'm good. Okay. And, it's a short one. Okay. It says summer sway, hands in pockets. Her defiance to dare, grinning like a confidently cold woman. She earned this. Yet others will look down upon her, watch her prove them wrong. And that's a wonderful brevity.
Wow. Yeah. the idea of a strong woman kind of always appealed to me in the sense that, you know, it's very often talked about by guys as a negative thing, you know, they can't deal with a strong woman, but that's always been something that I admired very, very much. You know, you need to be like that to have someone like me in your life. I definitely appreciate being able to, you know, put your foot down and do what you got to do to get it done. Sorry. So I very much appreciate this, and it's definitely a perception thing because, you know, like she says, some people look at it and see it as a negative, and, you know, I think in business, especially with women, and I have something to say about that, the competition between the two, you know, there's that definite wanting to outdo the other one assert dominance. I'm sure you could say it better, sweet.
Oh, I don't know about that.
You know, when you have the two women in business, the competition between the two of them.
You know, for me, I never thought, because I'm a weirdo. I never took women on as competition in my work. I took myself on as being competent in my work. I think that to compete against women is just a waste of women's ability. I think this is kind of what this says is, her defiance to dare, grinning like a confidently cold woman, she earned this, yet others will look down upon her, watch her prove them wrong. It's if you're confident in what you do, regardless if you're man, female, or a dog, I don't care. Confidence shines through. Intelligence shines through. Being prepared shines through. And that's how you prove people wrong. It's not about your sex. It's not about anything. It's about your ability to know, understand, study. When you walk into a room, know your audience. Know what they are. Know who they are. And I think that's how you prove them wrong. And if women can do that or if men can do that, that's where it comes down to. And if others think that makes you a cold woman, well, then, yeah, I'll prove you wrong every single time. And that's where it is.
Awesome. Thank you, sweet. And pretty bird, you ready?
You know, this is, This is the second one that I've read of hers this week. Like the one that she wrote for Sunday night had those breaks in it too. This she earned this. I absolutely love that statement and how it's separated from everything else. You know, grinning like a confidently cold woman. And here's the thing: when it comes to women, there are two types of confidence that is confidence as perceived two different ways by the general public, men more so than women, because women have more of an understanding. And there is that confidence of when you walk into a room, a gathering place, a party, a bar, whatever, and it turns men's heads, not because you're gorgeous, not because you're particularly, say, sexy, but the way a woman holds herself impacts everything. But when you walk into business and you've got that determination, or if you're knowledgeable in something and you're trying to educate people like in a group or whatnot, you tend to take a tone, and that is seen as distant or cold or unnurturing or whatever it is that they tend to look at masculinely, because society is still twisted that way, and you know it's turning ever so slowly, but it's still twisted that way. And that she earned this, like she worked for everything that she's got, whether they look down on you, say you can't or whatever, and there she is rising like the phoenix she is. And I absolutely love that, and there's a lot in this brevity, so kudos Kay. And we have a caller, 512. Hello.
Hello there, my friends. Hello there.
Hey, I was just going to put you up on the board. So your timing is absolutely perfect, Frank. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing all right there, my friend. Just getting through the day. I would say the night now. All right. Well, I appreciate that, my friend.
I am actually going to go, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, sweet.
All right,
okay, sweet. Good
Take
night.
Care,
good night, guys.
All right. Take care, sweet. This is a piece here sweet. That I wrote to be or not to be, and it actually deals on the subject there, the perception there, and the perception of one. So it goes like this: to be or not to be. That is a proverbial question one must ask. If life was based solely in our reality, we are nothing more than a collection of atoms evolved into matter. Our form will be defined as strictly physical, and our breath will be reduced to mortality. But life is much more than that. We are much more than the simplicity of our reality. We that are created from the aesthetic world of the innovative minds of intellect. I am a man that understands the world of artists, for I am the essence of art and its creation. I am who I am, and you are who you are. But I can be you, and you can be me, if you remember we are human. I am a philosopher, a man of knowledge and wisdom, a man of Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. Philosophy is not a religion or science. It is art, a way of thinking, and not a belief. In the world of reality, we are who we believe we are, even though others may perceive otherwise. To the world of our imagination, we are the illusion we create within the labyrinth of dreamers. You see, life is only what we define its relevance. It can mean something or it can mean nothing. Thus, the question must be queried, who are we and what becomes of us if there is no evolution and death? To be or not to be, that question in the poem.
I like how you took the familiar to be or not to be and ran with it. You really went on an elevated, deeper level of the perception when I think talking about, you know, all the traits that you see in yourself and whatnot, and you know how other people can say that they see something different, you know. That's kind of the crux of what I was thinking when I, you know, posed the question for the prompt tonight. It's you know, we see what we see and other people see what they see, and you know, they're not necessarily the same thing. So you extend to I could be you and you could be me and that sort of thought and you know you tear it down to the atom. So you really thought about this very deeply and it comes out in this right. I appreciate it very much, Frank. I enjoyed it.
Oh, I appreciate that, my friend. Oh,
thank
you very much.
And if I could get a comment from you, Pretty Bird?
Absolutely. Not just in title, but I get a sense of Hamlet in this, the ponderings of philosophy and science and what becomes of us if there is no after. The whole concept of we can be anything is amazing, and I'm still struggling, to be honest, with the whole if you are what you think you are, because there's a whole lot of fake and faking it till you make it that I struggle with on a ethical level for my own black and white mind, because I'm part of myself. The only trouble that I have is the I can be you and you can be me, and because I tend to think that we are, even though we're all human and have that in common, we are all unique and amazing, and our perceptions are altered while looking at the same thing in ways that can become magical and powerful. And it's the difference between looking at something with passion and looking at something with logic. And so I kind of love those differences. But I love the way you weave through the science and the philosophy, and it's all art, and we are all part of that same soup and the what ifs that are in here. So, excellent.
Yeah, I do appreciate that. Thank you. I'll stick around for a few minutes here. I've got a few minutes left. I could stay around till 11 o'clock. Then I have to get up in the morning. But I'll stick around
okay.
for the phone.
I know Sweet's got a show on Thursday that she ran away before she got a chance to mention about the your childhood walls. What would they say? I think something like
yes.
that. But
if the walls of your childhood room, childhood prepubescent room, could talk, what would they say? What would they tell you? What would they remember? Where does that concept go when you think about your childhood and all the things those walls have experienced with you? But there's a hard distinction. We're not talking about high school walls because that's a whole different show.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. So this is, if I can ask really quickly, the it's basically on like childhood memories or thoughts that you had when you were a child that you would, you know, that you would
well, I mean,
describing on a wall.
If you take the expression, if these walls could talk, so, you know,
yeah.
okay.
when you were a kid, what did your bedrooms, you know?
Right, so not necessarily
right,
your memories and hopes and dreams, but the perception of the only witness to it all, those walls.
Oh, I
and
see.
And she kind of left it open, too, because she didn't say specifically bedroom. You could talk about the living room or the den or even the kitchen. You know, that would make it interesting, right? You know, well, I mean, think about it. Your childhood kitchen, the scene of all the family meals and getting together, I mean, that's a definite direction that could be taken. Anyway, let's
I'll think about it.
Gerald, I want to put Gerald up next, but since we got Frank, let's take advantage. Is there another one that needs a reader that we could make Frank to work real quick before he runs away?
Yeah, he can read Bud.
Okay. Right. If you don't mind, Frank.
No. By all means.
I'd really appreciate it.
Is it up there? Oh, there it is.
It is. I just put it up.
I've seen this piece, and actually, I actually read this piece. I've read this piece on a podcast, but here it goes. This is a poem by a good friend here, and it's an extraordinary piece. It's called Dilapidation's Contempt, and it goes like this. In a hodgepodge of staff humanity, on an avenue in the East End, there lies a Thusian world of growing wonders, the bare-bone essence of breath, breathing shallow sighs and whispers of a new day, of bridging untowed barriers, where hope stirs easily like a full rave, greeting tenements of a gentle nudge to waken nature's veins and tangles, sprouting upward to engage fun smile. Sleepy-eyed, urban combustion, fluvy chugs and fear, as bright umbrellas bloom open over wrought iron fixtures, in wooden crate market stalls filled with tasty edibles and colorful rows of gratifying, delectable delights. Baths of bread baking in brick kiln ovens and the floor fronts of fresh-cut flowers and wrappers reach for passerbys as it glanced over from cobblestone pavement. And in the shops and under awnings, the diaspora greet with grins and handshakes, embroidered up aprons and Sunday's best. This, the business of usual, crescendos in volume and tempo, the clinks of wine glasses, prosciutto and braai, croissants, truffles, and streusel, a maturing may beam of grace, companionship, and thankfulness for the pleasures of imbibing life's blessings. On the street, in a neighborhood, of a borough, in a city, a colorful snapshot of serene brilliant, hidden in the folds of dilapidation's content. End of poem.
Wow. I know, I'm pretty sure I even commented on this before, but I love this, Bud. The mention of the wine glasses and everything being a bit of a foodie kind of, you know, grabs my attention. But the whole idea, when you start talking about perception and reality, when I hear the word hope, that kind of sums it all up for me, because when you look at something hopefully, you know, that's your perception. And it kind of skews the way you see things, even when they're dilapidated, you know. It's an appreciation for something that, you know, isn't necessarily at its best. And I see a little of that in this as well. This is really nice. I enjoyed it very much, Bud. Thank you for sharing this with us tonight. Get off your butt and call us sometime. We miss you. Anyway, thank you, Bud. Thank you very much. Frank, you read it. What'd you think?
Yes, first of all, I thought it was remarkable. You think of the notion there of what that paint portrait there, the prompt itself, what it signifies, what it represents. There, he says it clearly in the hard parts of stark humanity. It does remind me, perhaps, you know, the tenements there in the Victorian days of New York, you know, over there in your neighborhood there, you know, Rack over there, you know, just a colorful shade of life here, this poem offered here. There's so much extraordinary metaphors here, colorful imagery here, you know, and there's so much truth in the way of what is bespoken here. I'm not going to pick, I can't really pick one particular, you know, metaphor line there, because it's all enriched with a tapestry of wonderful aspirations. The notion there of the last two lines there, a colorful snapshot of serene brilliance hidden in the folds of dilapidation's content, you know, that's really a stark contrast there, you know, of something that's gone to pieces, yet it's appreciated to a certain extent because it's a snapshot of serene brilliance. And I thought this piece here was a wonderful snapshot of serene brilliance there in that dilapidation's content. So I thought this was one of his best pieces, I have to say.
Thank you, Frank. That was a wonderful comment. You know, as far as the verse, though, I think the one that stands out most, and I'm saying it before Pretty Bird does, because I'm pretty sure she's going in the same direction, where he starts delineating between the street and the borough, and again, curse my eyes, I can't find it to quote it, but I really love that verse. Yeah, I really love that verse. Go ahead, Pretty Bird.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I was all on a street in a neighborhood of a borough in a city. It could be anywhere that there's a tenement that he mentions, anywhere where people are stacked on top of each other, where those that aren't used to those cramped quarters and overpopulated areas of maybe not the highest, you know, financial status would be like, I would never live there. I don't know how they do it. And here's the thing. They say home is where the heart is. And this speaks to me of inner city rooftop gardens, and I love this. There lies a Susian world of green wonders that already opened your mind's eye to kind of that whimsy, you know, that whimsical nature of a child's eye. And this is detailed with wonderful turns of phrases. The title alone I find to be quite brilliant, Dilapidation's Content, because if it's dilapidated, you usually ain't happy with it. I'm just saying. And this is colorful and flavorful with the prosciutto and brie and the warm feelings and all these memories of all these little things of everybody gathering around that table and just being happy to be alive and noticing how green those rooftop gardens are. Or if you look at this image that he drew to the fire escape gardens, and there's green on everywhere, but you can't even see the street below because they're piled up so high. And it's kind of amazing that he looked at this picture, and this is what I love about Bud, because he's kind of really just amazing as a person. He can take the darkest, crumbled mess of crapola of life and be like, hey, that is fertilizer for the new forest, and you're going to have all this deciduous growth. And like, he's just fabulous. He just looks at all of this and says, you know what, I see it, but this is going to build into great things in no time at all. And there's such a beauty in that. And it just bleeds through all of these words, because he mentions the tenement, and he mentions that Hobb tragic stacked humanity and the dilapidation, but he focuses on the nature's veins and tangles, the greenery that's sprouting upward to engage the sun's smile. And, you know, most people would be like, you can't even see the sky because it's like 50 stories up, and, you know, no. And so he's just got this beautiful eye and this beautiful pen. And I kind of like I love his music. I love the way he emotes in lyrics. I do. But when he writes like this, I have to save it, because it is just the beauty of his perception of life. And I ain't that girl. I'm all darkness and shadows and no, but I love visiting his mind's eye, because it makes the world a prettier place.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Bud's a fun place to visit.
Yeah.
The way you were describing him, I was going to say, he said it sounds like Wayne, but sane.
Poor Wayne. Wayne's awesome. That man, he's awesome. I don't know.
Where is Wayne at?
I don't know.
I missed him today. I wasn't able to catch him today. So he's been incognito, I would say, for a few days. Perhaps I'll see him tomorrow and another day. We'll see. Hopefully in good spirits.
Oh, he was in great spirits the other night, and he's always in good spirits. You know, he's another one who's just got this wonderful way of being, his perception of life. And I'm like, you know, I must be the world's most pessimistic person. I don't feel like I'm pessimistic, but I am, you know, the shadows, and I'm okay with that. You know, if some people are the sunshine, I ain't that girl.
I don't want to say the wrong thing, but... Oh,
right, man.
What was that, Frank?
No, I say I've got to run now, my friend. So I thank you for having me on for the brief time. I wish I could stay on more, but I did enjoy the time, and good luck on the rest of the show. I don't know how much time you have, but always a pleasure.
We're only halfway through.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Take care, my friend. Take care, Rack. And
good night.
Oh God, my brain's going to say. I was going to say sweet, pretty bird. Take care, and it's good to see you again, pretty bird. I know it's been, I know you were on a spell there, but good to see you again. Take care.
Thank you. Take care. And I see that you have Gerald up on the board, so I will play him now.
Perception is Reality, written and read by Gerald Green. Perception is reality for those who can't discriminate or fail to look behind the veil. The world is full of those who don't exert themselves, preparing for exigencies or learning how to understand complexities, that each of us should be alert and study possibilities is paramount when trying to avoid deception. Only those who study and discover truth will make the wise and proper choice. What shows is what the shaman wants the world to think is right, except for those who've looked behind the veil, perception's not reality. End poem.
I kind of knew he didn't want to agree with me from the opening line. I could see you taking that stance, Gerald. I like the way you put it. The complexities of life, I think, is the telling point for me in this. Things aren't always as they seem, which I to me kind of enforces the perception as reality. But you know, who's to say who's got the right point of view when they look at something? So it's always open to debate, as it were, discussion. You put an interesting spin on it. Thank you, Gerald. Pretty much.
And we have Deb in the room, actually. Hi, Deb.
Hello.
Hey, Deb.
Hi, Zach.
I saw you put a placeholder and then you took it back.
Yeah, I do bumps. Butterflies,
no,
whatever
you
it
were
takes.
Writing,
during,
I thought you were writing something.
Oh,
so
I did.
You didn't bring
mean it's fair.
I'm sorry. I was a little disappointed. You know, I saw you said writing and then it went away. I was like, but there's no Deb link.
I actually just finished it 2 minutes ago.
Oh, sweet finished hers earlier too. I was just going to put Pretty Bird on the board after we got a comment for Gerald. Did you happen to hear his poem?
I did. Yeah. Quite a brevity here. I especially like the part in the second to the last verse, only those who study and discover truth will make the wise and proper choice. That's true no matter what. I often, you know, you hear crap around and I say, well, I'm sorry, but I need to go to the source. It's like you got to find it. You got to seek it. Don't just buy the BS that's floating around, you know. So sometimes, here's another example, like, you know, you go in and you read something, and for one, you decided it was about you, so you perceive that reality, but it's not true because it didn't have anything to do with you. However, if you see yourself in those lines, that's not my fault, you know. So you really need to ask, is that about me, so that I can say, nope. Like I even put a disclaimer in my poem tonight, just saying. But I like the angle he took this prompt from. He always brings the totally unexpected, but it's always great.
Good comment, Deb. And Pretty Bird, what'd you think?
You know, Deb, To piggyback on what you said, I have a favorite meme that I have made into a contest several times because I will write something, and usually I don't write about anybody in particular, but everybody and their mama thinks that I wrote about them, and I'm like, well, what the heck do you think you did that you think that this is about you, number one, you know? But it's a Morgan Freeman meme, and he's just sitting there with a fedora and a cigar going, no, this post isn't about you, but if the shoe fits, feel free to lace it up and wear it, and a little bit more colorful. But I'm like, you know, seriously, you hold on to that and enjoy. But so I'm right there with you. I am torn in his and Gerald's perception, because I am always a 50-50 split of logic and passion. So I'm all over the place, makes decisions horrible. We can find out and learn all we can. I absolutely agree. If there's something amiss, find out for yourself. But we have to discern always what we want to believe by who we're told and what we see and all of this stuff and how we perceive that. The mood that we're in when we accept the information colors how we're going to take it. And our moods change from minute to minute, you know. And so if, you know, it's almost like the sky we were mentioning earlier, where the sky is all storm clouds and lightning, but above that is always blue. So, you know, what color is it really? And so we have to take everything with a grain of salt and choose, you know, what we believe. And it's all what we see and how we interpret that. And as all the poems tonight have proven, everybody sees something a little bit different. And I'm always fascinated by that. It amazes me. But yes, absolutely. We have to never give up the fight to learn more about whatever it is and however we feel is necessary, because that's kind of what growth looks like to me. So I kind of love that concept.
Yes. You got anything coming up, Deb, as far as shows?
Like as the team of voices or myself?
Either or, whatever you want to push, go for it.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Well, let's see, tomorrow's Wednesday, which means that Lady A is on, and she has some facts about the Olympics in the 1900s and the conditions that the athletes had to deal with and the things that happened to them because of those circumstances. So it's pretty fascinating. Anything that any of the facts that she supplied, she hopes will inspire you to write something. On Thursday is our suite. Stop me if she already pushed her show.
We did.
Okay.
We pushed.
Friday is Tic Mac Toe, and it's a grudge match with Wayne versus Lady A. So
I know they were talking all up in it on Sunday. I'm kind of excited to listen.
Yeah, yeah. They're both winners, so they want to bring each other down if you take the crown, you know. Right. And Saturday is me, Hatter, and AP, and Hatter's he chose the topic for this week, and it's Love is in the Air for Spring. And then on Monday, introducing the artist Tune Hers, and there are some really incredible shots to choose from. You pick your picture, and I will remove it because nobody can have it but you. And then there's a word bank and some crayons, and see what comes out of that. Thank you.
Awesome, awesome.
Awesome. And thank you for making this possible.
Back at you.
yeah. This is a lot of fun, Deb. It really is, and for me, it's therapy. So, thank you again.
You and me both.
Saving
I second
saving
that. Third that.
What was it?
And I just put an example of the artist on the board, prepared if you want to check out Tune Hers, H-E-R-Z. Yeah, there's like 18 shots with male subject and 18 shots with female subjects, and I like the artist. There's a dark edge.
You know, it's funny. I mentioned that I had a poem about enucleation, and then there it is, a picture about somebody pulling out an eyeball. That's kind of awesome.
Well, I'm wondering if that might be what you choose then.
Well, I'm going to throw Pretty Bird under the bus, since that seems to be what happens.
Where I live, apparently. Okay. This is a short one. This is Theory of Absolutes. The gentle soul bleeds time. Well, apparently I can't talk to it. Let me start over. The gentle soul bleeds through time in words reflecting truth. Each truth a savored morsel, a particle of a picture too big to piece together. Contradictions and contraindications plague perceptions and pondering as if each truth is mutually exclusive. Oh, how lovely the innocent heart to think each emotion has but one home, each dream and desire a paradox, a labyrinth of choices that pit truth against honor and honor against love, leaving every path to feel unfinished, always searching for neutral ground, giving up joy to end the pain. End poem.
Wow. You always floor me. I'm telling you. That thought, I guess it's the second stanza where you go into the truth, the each emotion having its own home. Wow. Just adding that to the idea of perception and reality and you know, when you hear someone say something and you feel that it's a truth and then, you know, the contraindications, you got my head really spinning on this and this is just absolutely beautiful. I love it. Did you just write?
No, I live in my perceptions of twisted nonsense. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Four years. No. That. Yeah. Okay. So that wasn't fresh on your mind, but I'm glad you figured that you associated that with what I was talking about. This is very much, you know, that thought line that I was going through. You know, when someone presents something and you just look at it and you see one thing and someone else sees another and yeah, you're going to sit there and try and debate all night about which of you is right and what's the truth and, you know, what makes the truth the truth. So, yeah, beautiful. Beautiful.
I was going to bring absolute love because that's a little bit more not so this, but this is the one that won.
I'll probably go and dig up Absolute Love and read it again anyway. If I haven't read it already, I mean, I should say, you know me, I don't tend to dig things up. They have to be kind of trotted in front of me, but consider it trotted. This was beautiful, Pretty Bird. Thank you.
Thank you.
What'd you think?
Well, for one, what an amazing story. I had to hold on to it. And like the descriptions and stuff are like of the contradictions and all are really, really great. But what stands out for me is, oh, how lovely the innocent heart to think each emotion has but one home. That's brilliant right there. That's like you find a perfect photo and you couldn't do any better than to use that as a caption. That's just, like I said, sheer brilliance. And I had already quoted on it, didn't I? No, it's right now. But I don't care. It's like must save brevity.
That's awesome. But, you know, it's funny. It floors me because there are so many people that are like, sad is sad and love is love and anger is anger. And I'm like, nuh-uh. You're only angry if you give a crap. Otherwise, it's apathy, and you can walk away like it ain't no thing. So there's a little bit of this and a little bit of that that's all mixed together in different hues to bubble up in different ways. And I loved when I was young before, you know, your every heart's ever broken, you know. And I'm not even talking about romantic broken. I'm talking like before your parents stopped being superheroes, you know, where everything was happy or sad or angry. And, you know, you've got frustration. You learned that early on. You don't get what you want when you're a kid. And then they're sad to be sad and happy to be happy. There isn't all of this broken down pain. There isn't this anger at the injustice of lost love. There isn't any of that to taint it. And it's the only time that I ever remember a purity of emotion outside of pain. You can count on pain till the end of time. You know it'll always hurt. Pain sucks. That is there's no other way to do that. You can count, and there's a comfort in that. You can take solace in knowing that if you're in pain, it's gonna suck because you really can't count on anything else. Love is not always happy. I don't care how much you love somebody. It's that vulnerable state of the purity of love opens you up to disappointment and pain, even if it's short-lived. So, you know, I kind of like the idea of a purity of emotion. I just, it doesn't happen to be my own perception of reality.
Awesome comment.
I tend to talk a lot. Just shut me up anytime.
I was going to say, I'm glad we got you to come out of your shell.
Just a little bit. You know, it's the safety underneath that bus. Apparently, I like the fumes.
Get your lips off the tailpipe. It's not good for you. Anyway, that's not what they mean when they say you're going to blow up the bus.
OMG.
Okay.
Wrong night.
So, no, that's blow up the bus like a terrorist blow up the bus.
Yeah,
anyway,
but you're the one with the lips. I love
see,
you.
See, that's your perception.
I can't help it.
So we got Blue Hatter and Deb left.
Yes.
Do you have? Are you going to hang out, Deb, or would?
Yeah, I'm
going to
hang out. Do you know who the tenderloins are, Rack?
The tenderloins.
Yeah.
On a cow, you mean? The cut
I
of
mean
a tenderloin.
Like on I'll have to think of the show. They what's it called? I'll think about it. It's a group of guys, comedy guys, four comedians. They call themselves the Tenderloins. And Misery Index.
Okay, no, I'm not familiar with them, but they sound like someone I can enjoy.
The only reason I ask is because they're from up in like New York City and. The one guy especially has the same accent as you.
Oh God!
When they do the trailers for the show and he talks, it actually makes me think of you.
Oh,
that's awesome.
I was on another show one night and I heard Beast for the first time, and she's got a very thick Brooklyn accent York accent. I put it, and you know, people they were teasing her, and I'm like, hey, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't hear no accent.
Do a show called Practical Jokers, but yeah, I think her and her daughter have the same birthday, and I think that's fascinating. Anyway,
Is it Impractical Jokers or Practical Jokers?
Maybe it's I don't know. They torture each other, and they sit in a room and one of them goes out and they make them say really horrible things or they walk up to people.
I think I've seen that. They're
the tenderloins, those four guys.
Okay. That's awesome. Which of you ladies wants to read for Hatter?
Me.
Please? Go right ahead, Deb. And I'll read Blue.
Sounds like a
He's
plan.
Up on the board.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is called What Could All This Mean by Jay Hatter. Here we go. The dawn showed oceans that were half full. The rivers dropped to a stream. The mountains ate the glacier ice. What could all this mean? They all assumed we began at noon, but it's already after 3. What started as even was never the reason to scare the hell out of me. If you start when convenient and can't see the line, don't point your finger like it's a sign of the times. What's written is skewed. That's nothing new. We can only guess what's in store. Don't say it's dying when no one is trying. We can't take it anymore. End quote.
Wow, this is a jumble of thoughts. I enjoy this. You know, the motif of being like the Mad Hatter, it kind of comes out in this. He's looking at something serious, but at the same time he's saying it in a way that's really whimsical. And I enjoy this very, very much, Hatter. The streams, you didn't say specifically about a glass being half full, but, you know, you kind of implied it, and I thought that was brilliant, that you intentionally avoided that cliche, as it were, and you know, the ocean is half full, and I really like that. It reminds me of another thought that's I find very amusing. That if there were no sponges at the bottom of the ocean, would it be deeper? But anyway, this was really cool, Hatter. I enjoyed it. Deb, you read it. What'd you think?
Well, usually when I read for Hatter, I go by how easily it flowed. And since I've never seen this before and I just read it cold and it was easy to pick up his meter and just run with it, he nailed that part of it. I think that I love the examples that he used. And it hits pretty hard what could all that mean to scare the hell out of me. Life is the sign of the time. Like it's the sign of the time. Like the last lines of each one pack a punch to close out that stanza. And then the closing couplet, what can I say? Don't say it's dying when no one is trying. We can't take it anymore. It's like, bam. So, fantastic. Honor to read for you, Hatter.
Yeah, I got global warming out of that. Despite the... But anyway, Pretty Bird, what'd you think?
No, I absolutely, that's exactly what I got too. And there's this whole feeling that we're all late to the party because nobody wanted to look at it. They're like, we're good. It's fine. It ain't no thing. And then all of a sudden we're in this dire state and like they didn't see it coming. And he's all like, well, when you start, whenever, when you notice, you know, it's a little too late, you know, don't point your finger. You know, it didn't just happen. You saw it coming however long ago. But it's in this rhyme, and the way this flows adds a little bit of a whimsical feel to it, so it makes it sound innocent when, in fact, it's really dire. And so I think that that's a brilliant little twist in there because you're reading along, and you're getting these images, and you understand, well, you know, you did it to yourself. You could have been prevented long ago, but without actually having – to come out and pinpoint all the little, you know, societal wrongs and whatnot. And I just found that to be, very brilliant little twist.
Awesome. This had it telling us, I told you so.
And fabulous rhyme and flow.
Do blue on blue. And,
yeah, I will put blue up.
It should be there.
It's there. Oh, you already did it. Huh? That's funny. You're just on the ball tonight. You beat me to it. This is Where the Mind is Without Fear by Xylophonic Blues. And it is long. Bear with me. My tongue has been twisted all night long, so hopefully I don't butcher it. Here we go. Isolated classrooms, a courtroom to awaken, arise. Execute sweeps, helpless hands, messages stamped, soldiers coming home to root communities, refugees sifting the soils of history, searching for compassion, trees planted by the waters of today, justice one-sided, tired, huddled masses to breathe free, seek untrodden paths, north wind-shaped perceptions, stamped foreheads of the hungry, humble, frail fingers, nimble and long, hand once close and strong. Mirrors cradled fire, deserted airplanes sail by through clear windows, squared suspension. Bosom's air cloud folds bursting, her vestments overcome like thunder's flame over the woodlands. Clouded shadows, sunbeams lost in the dusk, descends the snow from whence unearthed injustices of buried dreams came. Marching beats lingering behind, hear footsteps on the pavements, an echo in the street. California's coast and summer's cruel concrete. In the land flowering with milk and honey songs of generous bread, keys shutting the door through hunger and fear hearing shrills, impediment of arms, storied lessons. Watch our values die, never to repeat. Humming fills speaking words, unfolding an empty vessel, thirsty to receive. Shaded branches reach voices, dearest child. Diaphragms sing from New York City to fields of Kansas wheat. Cobblestones of human thought shivering. tweed in hand freedom's promise, finished sewn pleat. May flight's tattered fray transcend and soar, amber waves spill of whispered promise, quilled pens and voices nobility her wind whispering. A poet's ink-stained feet look to pathways untrodden, stand. Faith holds water, a tiny mustard seed's hand. Hope for tomorrow, a mighty grain of sand. End poem.
Wow. He does such a job with imagery when he gets on the roll like that. It's almost like a shotgun to me. He brilliant little flashes into one huge burst. I'm so thrilled that he mentioned history, because that when you talk about perception and history really is something I probably should have gone to first when you think of something like that, because they say the victor when there's a war, it's the victor is the one that writes the history or something along those lines. I'm probably screwing it up, but that's kind of the thought that comes into mind. Revisionist history, so that type of perception when you talk about war is really very poignant, and he's got that in here along with so many other wonderful thoughts. Pretty Bird, you read it. Where did this take you?
It took me to a sideways view of God Bless America and America the Beautiful, with all the amber waves and whatnot, which I think is a wonderful way to wrap that up when he starts with classrooms and courtrooms and helpless hands and soldiers coming home and refugees sifting the soils. When you start at that place and you weave all of this imagery through cobbled streets from New York to Kansas to the oceans in California, when you've got those amber waves of promise, of whispered promise, and you've got poet's ink and pathways untrodden, looking for the beauty and these tiny seeds of hope for tomorrow. I think that this is epic, and it covers so much, and it weaves it together in these staccatoed images, kind of like a slideshow of little bits of thought to ponder on long after you initially read it. And you gotta love a poem that makes you think.
Yeah, and he definitely does. Deb, if you can comment on Blue, and I'll put you up on the board and you can read next.
Absolutely. One thing about the poems, when he writes, he has so much imagery that my head spins sometimes, and the metaphors are off the charts. It's like he's pretty clever, because you don't have any choice but to go back and check out some of the stuff again, because you're like, oh wow. And sometimes when you go back, it hits you a different way. So talk about the concept of what you perceive. If you can have it change in the same person in a matter of minutes, just by going back and looking again and thinking, oh no, wait, that's pretty powerful. Humming fills speaking words, unfolding an empty vessel, thirsty to receive. There's something about that, thirsty to receive. I really, that's my favorite stanza, that second to the last one there. I think you did a hell of a job.
Awesome, right, Blue? And Deb?
Okay. I think I kind of went on a rant, and just because the last time I put a specific thing in there, she's like, what did I do? So I'm going to do my disclaimer first. since everything is a matter of perception, my disclaimer. The adjective sweet used above is a way to describe a nice disposition. I do not want to punch my sweet in her face. I love her, and this poem is not about her. Just saying. Here we go.
I kind of love that.
Here we go.
Particularly because she always thinks it's about her.
Yeah, well, it's when she is the first thing I think of when I say sweet, but in this particular case, it's just a freaking adjective. Anyway, here we go. Everything is up for interpretation, even you. One. Uh-oh. Eyes gaze at the color picture. The girl in it smiles dressed in lace. You label the woman as so sweet, but I'd like to clobber her smug face. My spidey sense is kicking gear, just spotting the little faux grin. From that I ate the canary look as my skin crawls from within. Her giggle is just stirring the kettle, splashing the crap droplets that fly. Her plastic smile is lanolin lipstick, and if she speaks, then her lips lie. Two, leather book covers that money and publishers supplied, wrapping all the parchment sheets written down as pen and ink collide. In recognition of the engraved pages, the idea is to go decipher the inside, not to judge the paragraphs and chapters by the synopsis two green eyes spied. Three, every night poets interpret the poems from lines painting the sky cobalt blue. My pen writes the scene in periwinkle, though we share the same landscape view. The blazing sun you spy is stained goldenrod. Tangerine tints glitter lighting skies in mine. He sees satellite in chrome white, and I see opal lighting the stars that blink neon as they shine, showing that snapshots need flesh on eyelids, pull the ideas from the printed lines. And four, mosaics are broken shards patched in wood frames. Players are men and ladies just playing head games. And no two people on earth see the views the same. End poem.
This is great, Deb. I love your crayons. You managed to work that in here, well. But yeah, the message that you weave in this too is really, really awesome. and the perception point of view, you know, that it's not sweet that you're talking about is. Definitely poignant in this too. I mean, wow! I love the giggling. There's so much in here. Your imagery is beautiful in this, and again, your message about the way you describe, like, you know, people's line, the lying lips and things like that. And when you look at someone and hear these things, you know, it makes you think of Consider the Source, which, you know, we were talking about earlier as well. This is very thought-provoking, and I enjoyed it very much, Deb. Pretty Bird, can you say something without stuttering like I am?
I'll try. No promises. I am absolutely in a vignette number one kind of place. Just you know, aim for the throat. You're less likely to break a bone in your hand. I'm just saying, bones in the face are hard. But
good advice.
I am just, you know, it just sticks in my craw, and I don't use craw very often, so it's a thing. where there are people that are all saccharine sweet. There's nothing real in those plastic smiles and god awful giggles that just sound like fingernails on a chalkboard. Yet people just come running, like, oh, they're so wonderful, and I'm like, snap out of it! What is wrong with you people? You know, so I am in that kind of place, but I get you. I just absolutely, absolutely get you. And I'm always up to throat punch somebody, so just give me a call if you need help.
There you go.
And
might need you to bring a shovel.
There you go. I might throw my back out a little bit digging, but, you know, I know where the good places are to hide. And
aren't there gators where you're from?
There are. Chop them up in small pieces. You're good. and every vignette is so wildly different from the one before. Yet they weave together that this wonderful little way, kind of like turning the page to a new chapter. And so I kind of love that. And you do that very, very well. You like flip the page with the number, and not all vignettes transition nicely, or thread together in some kind of way. So you did that very well. It's a very cohesive piece, and I love that leather book covers, the dust jackets, and all of this. And it reminds me of the Bible, not to be all religion, but it does, because I only have two types of leather bound books in my house, and three. One of them was an old set of encyclopedias that are now kind of useless, but I can't get rid of them because they're a work of art. And my mom's old Shakespeare collection and every Bible known to man. And so my mind just goes there with the parchment and the leather book and don't just jump to conclusions, you know, delve in deeper and figure your own crap out. You know, it's going to tell you what you need to know whenever you seek it. And it's like that for all books, really. You know, you can, and poetry in particular, you're going to find something that's going to speak to you through your own experience. Doesn't matter what the words are. I mean, I could write "The sky is blue," and your mind will take you to a summer day where there were no clouds or whatever. Take somebody else someplace else, and it has nothing to do with "the sky is blue." It's just our experiences of where that leads us, and it's the beauty and the artistry of those poets. And so that vignette number three kind of covers our shows and our visions, and my favorite part of them, besides my, you know, incessant talking, is that everybody sees something different always. And I find such magic in that, because poetry, like painting and drawing, you know, especially abstract paintings and all poetry, people look at them and they will get what they will. And maybe it speaks to them, maybe it doesn't, but everybody will see something, and it's very seldom exactly the same. So I absolutely love that you kind of brought all of that to the table. You have a lot in here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The plastic... I definitely enjoyed this. I guess that's everything for tonight. So we can end a little early. It's a shame.
Absolutely.
You don't get money back.
Can I just tell you two one thing though? We as a team are going to tackle some subjects, whatever is near and dear to your heart. It's our new soapbox series, and we're going to take turns, and each host or hostess is going to get a chance to advocate for something. I have already done endangered species. Hatter did bees. In May on the 11th, Sweet and I are going to tackle whales and what they mean to the oceans. And Sweet on her own on World Elephant Day will tackle that subject in August. So other than that, there is a spot for all of my team, and I'd like you to chew on what you think you'd like to stand on your soapbox for. And once you do that, we'll toss around the dates. You don't have to use your own show night for it. There's a slot for it. And I'm going to change the Tuesday slot to 8 to 10 so that more people can participate because they're important. Now, Gress's show is at 7 and Rax is at 11, but the other Tuesdays are moving to 8 to 10. So if you just want to chew on an idea of some subject, any subject that's important to you that you'd like to advocate, I'd love to hear some of your ideas.
Now, Sweet's already got the elephant in the room, so
But it does, you said anything. It doesn't have to be animals. It can be like
anything. It coincidentally has been so far, but it can be feed the children. It can be chop bodies in pieces to help better feed the gators, to get them to leave the pets in the area alone. Anyway, but yes, whatever. When I say to you, what is near and dear to your heart, what would you like to see more people know? Where would you like to shine a light that might help the next guy? That's what I want you to advocate for.
I will definitely think about that.
Yeah, you chew on that for a while, and we will talk about it later.
Sounds
good.
Let me
know when you come up with something, and I'll toss some dates at you.
Excellent. I kind of like that whole concept of enlightening people with whatever we find that we feel strongly about. So that's kind of awesome. Because, you know,
good,
it's
glad.
Good to champion a cause.
Yeah, yeah. Child abuse, whatever. It, like I said, it's been a coincidence so far. I did the endangered species, and then it just gave me the idea. And Hatter has for a while been worried about the bees, and then my sweet, who, you know, she might be the queen of darkness, but she's got a solid gold heart too, so she's just fighting for her animals at the moment. But whatever makes your heart cry to be able to help, there's where I want you to go.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Oh, I guess this is the part where I get to say thank you to everybody and probably miss somebody, because that inevitably happens. But first and foremost, you know, I have to thank you, Deb, for making this possible. And for Pretty Bird, thank Pretty Bird for being my eyes and helping me with the studio. You know, I'd never be able to do it without you. We got thank you to Kay and to Frank, and let's see, who else? Laughing Soul wrote for us, and Gerald, always loyal, always faithful. Marius gave us peace. We got Bud, and we had Xylophonic Blue, and of course our dear Hatter. Rounds out the bunch, I think. Oh, and how could I forget? Sweet also gave us an amazing piece. If you missed it, Deb, you're definitely going to want to play it back. She gave us a really great piece. Anyway, and that's you know, thank you all for supporting me and writing for the show. And you know, we definitely can't do it without you. And look forward to dropping some comments on each of your pieces later on. And it takes me a little bit to get to it, but I promise you I will. You know, we're a team of voices, and we're on All Poetry, and I guess that's it for the evening. Thank you very
great
much,
show.
Deb, for being possible again.
My pleasure.
Yeah, yeah, it was a wonderful show.
Love and
pretty
respect, good. Guys.
Back at you. Thank you very much. You guys are awesome.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.